As I understand it, queer theory and queer politics really arrived more or less together in the United States, not in England, in the late 80s with HIV. And really, some of the real progenitors of thinking these things out were AIDS activists in places like New York, where New York ACT UP combined these very, very interesting and innovative ways of organizing and staging protests with a lot of cultural work. Very interesting posters, very interesting art exhibitions, very interesting use of language and sloganizing and graphics, which I suppose flows on today into things like the anti-globalization movement. It was that kind of cultural creativity around politics. But there were very particular reasons why they had to do this, and they had to do it really urgently. And they're not the same as the situation in England. The United States has no national health system. People who were ill in the 80s had very few resources, unless they were incredibly wealthy, in terms of medical care. So people had to shift their politics. And at that point, there was a real split, I think, between lesbian politics and gay men's politics. And that, to a large extent, had to be overcome to make some kind of impact, and this huge demand on the medical authorities and the state authorities to do something about this. People were you know, putting up posters that said silence equals death, and effectively that was the case. In the United States, ACT UP would do things like they'd stage die-ins where they'd lie down in a large public space or on a street even in New York, and make points about what the civic or national authorities were doing about making treatments available to people. And they had these great chants. That was the first time I heard, "We're here, we're queer, get used to it," in that very funny American inflection, a sort of sardonic inflection. In England, ACT UP didn't have quite as much impact. And it was not difficult to understand why it wouldn't. Medical treatment was available. Differentially available, not as available, not perhaps as carried out as well as it should have been, and there were people, heroic people like Simon Watney, making huge efforts to encourage people to do a lot more. But we did have the right as taxpayers to be treated free of charge in this country, and that was simply not true for the most part in the United States. Secondly, I don't think British people are sex-phobic in the way that some kinds of Americans are, or by and large I don't think they are. I came to England in the late 60s because it had already distinguished itself as a relatively liberal society in terms of decriminalizing at least adult male homosexual practices in private and decriminalizing abortion. And that was important to me when looking at the society and thinking that it might be a more just and bearable society for me as a young lesbian to live in and as a feminist. That tradition, although it has certain limits, continued in England. Mrs. Thatcher tried to put a lid on it, but she wasn't wholly able to. And there was, I think, less impetus to do things like those die-ins. Nevertheless, laws stayed on the books until very, very recently that effectively criminalized male-male flirtation in the street. I mean, you could be arrested if you were a man for indecency, for kind of holding hands, practically, technically. And I can see why people like Peter Tatchell organized his kiss-ins, and I certainly see why the age of consent had to be made equitable. There's absolutely no doubt that that was a huge, glaring inequality in how the law understood our sexuality, and particularly gay men's sexuality, because, of course, it didn't technically apply to lesbians. But I think people in England thought some of the kissing stuff here that Outrage did was kind of funny. Because, in a sense, this wasn't a society where a queer kiss was that scandalous. The kissings happened probably after My Beautiful Laundrette had already been a hit at the movies. And My Beautiful Laundrette was commissioned for TV. Never would have been shown on broadcast television in America. But we were kind of... Perhaps we metropolitan people who went to movies like My Beautiful Laundrette, perhaps not everybody, but I think that was quite a popular movie, and it was then shown on Channel 4, who'd paid for it, already showed that great, big, lovely snog in the laundrette between two cute boys with lots of tongue and lots of suds, as I recall, in a way that I think made certain forms of public performance less cutting edge than maybe they seemed to a lot of Americans.